It's showtime, folks. Welcome in, Chase and Big Joe. Wednesday edition, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. He's Big Joe Dubin. I'm Chase McCabe. Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier on the ones and twos. The reporter hanging out, too. Hi, reporter. Nick Kieser. He's getting married, in case you didn't know.
Tough guy in there.
He is a tough guy. We love him, though. What's up, JoJo?
What's happening, man? You know, it's funny that I'm unprepared again, and I've told myself that.
When are you ever prepared?
9 o'clock rolls around the same time every single day. So once I figure that out, I'm good to go. So what's happening?
My favorite thing in the world, and I learned this early in my career, is when there's like an annual event that's the same time every year, and it's been the same time every year basically since the beginning of time, and people go, right. Oh, it kind of snuck up on me.
That's a good one. Like, I don't think I could sneak up on anybody, which is fine.
No, you can't, but that's okay. So we got a great show playing. John McClain going to join us at 9:30, as he always does on Wednesdays. Talk some football with him. The league meeting's going on. Get his thoughts on a bunch of different things. Comments from DeAndre Hopkins that probably need to be addressed at some point.
Few things. I got a few things that get off my chest this morning.
Okay. Go ahead. Joe's corner.
One, I'm tired of the – we've had this discussion before. The nicknames, you know, D-Hop, you know. Listen, it's nothing against you. You know how I feel about this. You're not his buddy. So it's DeAndre Hopkins. So don't say D-Hop or Trotsy or, you know, it just that always bugs me crazy. In fact,
you know what I'm going to say, right?
I know. That's okay. That's why I love you. That's why we're 50-50. We can agree to disagree. There's a reporter in this town who one time, Derrick Henry was doing a press interview after practice, and somebody addressed him as King.
Oh, no.
And another person cut me a look, and I just put my head down in shame. It's like, King. Okay, let's stop doing that. You know, the one that gets me going, Sneds. That drives me insane. It's Brant Snedeker. He's not your friend, so stop calling him Sneds. Second rant, can I go on? Ready?
Yep.
So Roger Goodell and Governor Bill Lee go to Pearl Cone yesterday, and they're because owners are in town, NFL is in town, and they do this event. I forget what it's for, and, you know, photo op. Take your sunglasses off if you're Roger Goodell. Nobody's got sunglasses on. Take your sunglasses off for the photo shoot, right? You don't go on TV. You wouldn't do that on TV. Take your sunglasses off. That's all I'm asking. For the 30 seconds you're getting this photo opportunity, Roger Goodell, I know you're listening. You're in town.
I think that's fair. That's a fair rant.
Okay. And I'm done.
That's a fair rant.
Thank you.
On that.
Rex Rhodes got the great rants.
Yeah.
Those are good. Mine's just a complaint.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. That's I like it.
All right, thank you.
So,
would you like a rebuttal? please.
So the nickname thing has been like a major point of contention on any show that I have been on.
Right.
Basically my entire career.
I know.
Because here's the thing. Being around the Predators and now that Kieser's around him, I would love to know his opinion on this. But being around them for so long, we weren't friends and running buddies or anything, but I got to know them on a different level.
Right.
And it just naturally became like, if I saw Ryan Johansson, be like, hey, what's up, Joey? Or, you know, it's like, and they'd call me Chaser. You know, I mean, it just kind of developed into that.
Okay.
And so it's like, you know, I produced our old morning show, and Braden Gall all the time was like, oh, it's unprofessional. You can't do that. And I'm like, well, you've never stepped foot in the Preds locker room, so how'd you know?
I'm not.
Which he has. We Braden and I are very cool,
right?
But, like that's kind of where it was. It's just like, just let me do my thing, and yeah. So yes, I use nicknames.
Okay, that's fine. No, I mean I'm not a fan of it. But
that's fine. That's fine.
Nobody cares about me, and I have no say so in anything in this world. But I'm just that. Oh, it just bugs me crazy.
I think where my thing on it comes from, and you don't do this, and Braden didn't either, but it's like people on the outside will be like, well, it is your job to be professional. And it's like whenever anybody starts a sentence with it's your job,
right?
The wrath of like my eyes turn red. They're like Kyle Vandenbosch, and I go, you have no bleeping idea what my job is, so don't act like you do. Like
it's your job.
It's like just like I don't know whoever's saying that, I don't know what your job is.
Okay, fair enough.
Like, I got into this because I'm a fan, for one.
Sure.
Right?
Like, you love what you do. That's
I'm not a journalist.
Yeah.
You know, I don't consider myself a journalist.
So if you saw Brant Snedeker at Green Hills Mall, what would
I'd
you
call
say?
Him Brant, because okay, like I don't have any kind of relation. And like, you know, DeAndre Hopkins, I think I just say D Hop because everybody else says D Hop. Like it's just, you know,
if they all jumped off a bridge,
I would not join them.
All right, so my rant on sunglasses.
No, I agree with you on that.
Thank you.
You're the commissioner of the NFL. Take your sunglasses off.
Just for 30 seconds.
Right.
That's all I ask right there.
So you're not cool.
A lens behind the glass here, whatever. Keezer was telling me about what he does with the Preds and whatnot. If he's familiar with the person, there's a large group, he'll give them, you know, a little nickname jab, so they'll kind of get recognition towards him. But if it's in a smaller group, he always goes by the first name in the proper form.
Okay. That's fine.
Just putting that out there.
Okay. Keezer didn't have the pull I have, so that's okay.
Right.
There you go. I do have a funny story about Brent Snedeker, though.
Yeah,
I'll tell it.
Oh, okay. So my mom used to cut his mother's hair, and in return, Brent signed two visors, one for my brother and one for me. And so mine said to Nick, you know, best wishes, Brent Snedeker, right? So then my brother gets one, and my brother's name is Tony, and it says to Daniel, best wishes. And so, yeah, wow. We still have that visor. I'm like, Tony, am I going to start calling you Daniel now? Like, what's the deal?
I'd wear that with pride.
It was the funniest thing. It's been a funny joke for the longest time now. But, you know, I don't believe his mother she doesn't get her hair cut from my mom anymore because I think she's just either moved or whatever it is. But, yeah, you just be good terms there.
Okay. Hey, does your mom use a Flobee?
What is that?
What the hell is that?
You never heard of a Flobee?
No.
Look it up.
Joe,
God, you guys are just a different generation. It was an infomercial late at night called a Flobee. Just look it up.
You're not helping the cause here. An infomercial late at night, and it's called a Flobee. That could be a lot of different things.
No,
what the hell is
that? It's very G. It's nothing bad. Look it up.
It sounds like a 1999 purchase.
It was a thing. It was. It's a thing where you could cut your own hair like a vacuum cleaner for your hair. It was a Flobee.
You know what? I do remember that now.
Yep. And it was, I mean, they infomercial nonstop in the 80s for a Flobee. And it was like, who in the hell would purchase a Flobee?
I would not do this.
Did you see it?
Yes. This just looks like a buzz cut waiting to happen.
It looked like, did you see the movie No Country for Old Men when Javier, he would go down and shock people? That's looked like what he had, like a Flobee.
That's a great movie, by the way.
It is it's a very underrated, bizarre, crazy movie because he scares the you-know-what out of everyone. I think he won a best Oscar for that role.
I think so.
But that's what he's got. It looks like he's got a Flobee, and he just shocks you and kills you.
Would not buy a Flobee. That just doesn't look safe.
Okay. Well, there you go.
So thank you for – so Brant Snedeker's listening, and Brant, have a good day,
buddy. Sup, Sneds?
If possible, could you get a visor that says Tony on it? It'd be pretty
So the Preds make a trade yesterday, Ryan McDonough. Sent back to Tampa Bay, which is where he spent a good majority of his career, won two Stanley Cups. Preds get a second-round pick coming back. They swapped a seventh and a fourth for this year, but they get a 2025 second-round pick.
Wait, how old is he?
35. So, I hate losing the leadership. He had a really good year, but he and we'll hear from Barry Trotz in a second. He had kind of expressed that, you know, he wanted to go back to Tampa. That's where he and his wife wanted to kind of settle down. They really enjoyed it there. Their kids enjoyed it there. And that if there was ever an opportunity for him to go back, he'd love to do that. And, you know, Barry Trotz being the guy he is, you know, did talk to him and they were interested and they were able to make it work. And now the Predators save $6.5 million or more on a 35-year-old aging player. And so now they have that room. They're going to have to replace him. They got to find a defense partner for Roman Josi. But I hate to see him go, but I don't hate the move either.
When did he say he missed Tampa? Please tell me it was not during the season.
No, this was during the here's Barry Trotz. He kind of explains it better than I will. This is Barry Trotz on how this came to be.
Well, it was a request a little bit from Ryan. We talked at the end of the year, and he's got so many good memories of his time in Tampa. I think that's probably where him and his wife are going to settle. And we just had a conversation about, you know, a little bit of life and what holds in the future. And for me, he's been such a fantastic leader and someone who's, you know, I have so much respect to with. He says if there's ever an opportunity for me to get back to Tampa, he asked if I would, explore that a little bit. And so out of respect and type of person that Ryan is, talked to Julian, and we made, a fair deal that would allow us to have Ryan go back to Tampa Bay and do the right thing. There's sometimes in this game you try to do the right thing for good people, and Ryan is honestly one of the best leaders that I've ever been associated with.
There you go. There's Barry Trotz yesterday. So it was their end of the year conversation.
All right. So I'm. What's the difference between him and Duchesne? They shipped Duchesne out, and I didn't hear the glowing remarks from Barry Trotz about that. I don't know anything about this. So I'm defaulting.
Well, completely 100% different situations.
Okay.
I mean, the thing with Ryan McDonagh is he just said that he knows he's kind of on the back nine of his career and wanted to end his career in Tampa. And so he didn't want to leave Tampa. It was one of those things that Tampa was up against the cap and they knew they were going to have to move him. And so Nashville was a place that he was willing to go. And now that, even though they're still kind of against the cap, but they were able to make it work and take him back.
So, okay. So, I mean,
it's all good. Like yeah. It's nobody's like, you know, nobody should be mad.
Could Duchesne have stayed here if he wanted to? No,
that was different. That was different because that
was his contract up.
No, that was Duchesne had a lot of years left on his contract. That was culture. That was attitude.
Okay. All right.
And that was Barry Trotz changing the culture. He wanted more McDonagh guys than Duchesne guys.
God, you don't like Duchesne, do you?
No, I think he's a.
Get it out.
He's arrogant. I just think he does. It's all about him. He would, you know, cared about coming to Nashville and being a country music star and retiring and being the life of Nashville. And then sometimes he'd be a great player and sometimes he'd take the night off.
But you all y'all wanted him for years.
Right.
And was he in Columbus for a little bit?
He was in Denver, and then he was in Ottawa, and then he was in Columbus.
Okay. Yeah. You know, everybody's like, yeah, look, we get him, look, get him here.
And now he's awesome in Dallas, and maybe it's humbled him, you know, because he got fired. Essentially is how it was
here.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, so I hope it humbled him, but it's like, that was the problem. It's like when he was good, he was really good. And it's like, yes, you should be a 40 goal scorer. And this is why they brought you in here. But then he'd take plays off and take nights off and, you know, just would go through the motions. And I have a problem with that. And there are other players that in other sports that have come through here that have done that. And I feel the same way.
So it's a perfect segue into our question of the day.
That is a good one.
Because he fits right into what we're about to talk about.
I have some more Preds thoughts and what this means too. But yes, we'll get to our question.
All right. So our question of the day is, with the cicadas outside, so annoying and just nonstop, just pestering everything, who is the cicada of the sports world? Not somebody that you hate, but somebody that just annoys you and wish they would just shut up. We want to know who that cicada is. 615-737-1025. Who is the cicada of the sports world? I told you, man, my neighbor did the decibel level all night, and they're at 90. That's like a lawnmower going all night long.
Can I make a rule?
Yeah.
Can I, for our audience?
Yeah.
Don't say Stillman. Just say somebody else. Because we know, I get it. I know, I get it.
Already retired to the rafters.
Yeah, the jersey's hanging in the rafters.
Good.
It's Stillman and Kaharski, and like they're all up there.
That's fine. Okay. That's fine. Yeah, the cicada of the sports world. We want to hear it.
Because I know how the people react, and it's fine. So yeah, no. Okay. Cicada of the sports world. 615-737-1025. And then coming up next, what does this move signify for the Predators, and what's next in their development? We'll discuss that coming up next. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game on this Wednesday.
Perfect. What year is this? Does it say?
I'm going to say like 86.
Yeah, that's a great song.
Black Cat. Yesterday afternoon, was driving around Nashville, and I got in a bad mood because of Nashville traffic. And I threw on some Janet Jackson. I just felt better. So I was just in a Janet mood yesterday.
She's so underrated. I mean, what do you mean underrated? Look, she needs to be talked about at that high, high, high level. Cause
yeah.
That's some good music.
1989.
Yeah. 89.
Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, man. The producer is fantastic on that.
I just love that guitar. That drum and then that guitar comes in. It's just so badass.
It's very cool. The response is rolling in, Chaser. Who's the cicada
they are.
Of the sports? Do you have cicadas at your house?
Yes, everywhere.
All around? Yeah. Dr. Crane, you had those on your lawnmower, you said?
Yeah. My father has a lawnmower. And, you know, when you turn them on, the lawnmower, and you leave it away by itself for a little bit, apparently cicadas love vibration. And so they just swarm the vibration of it all. Okay. Also, I found out. If you also use, you know, on rainy days, you don't hear a lot of cicadas. Right. So if, you know, use your little sprinkler system, if you have one, get one from Lowe's, you know, it goes back and forth like this.
Yeah.
Aim it towards your trees. They won't be on the trees near your house, which means you don't hear them.
Don't they come back, though? I mean,
yeah, okay. But like it kind of pacifies the noise for a little bit.
Okay. All right.
So, I mean, you could do that. Just give me a little word of advice for people.
This
out there.
Is the Cicada Corner with Dr. Crane. Thank you. All right, Chase, you read those off. You better read them.
You can weigh in on our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHonda.com, 615-737-1025. We've already gotten some interesting texts today. You know, apparently, texter can smell in here. I don't.
Yeah,
I don't
it's pretty cool. Yeah.
Kyle leads us off and says, Colin Kaepernick. Okay.
Isn't he passed, though? I mean, that's fine. There's no wrong answer, but I just.
People are saying Stillman, even though I said don't say Stillman. Hair Metal Henry says in the 90s it was Bill Laimbeer.
That's a good one.
Yep.
But he's a champion.
Stephen A. Smith.
Yeah. Do you have a personal one?
I was going to say Dion.
Okay.
Dion's kind of that way now.
Yeah, he's gotten there. Mine is Pat McAfee because he blocked me on Twitter. So
I love McAfee.
He shut his mouth.
Vincent Dixon says Dion. 8354 says Patrick Beverly. He's a pesky defender and annoying on the court. It's a good one.
Okay, yeah.
Stephen A. Smith gets another one. Thomas on a car phone says Dion. For God's sake, just shut up, Prime. Thanks, guys. 5353 says LeBron James. David in Arkansas says Denny Hamlin. Yes, I dislike him, but it's because he runs his mouth too much and he complains too much.
Well, you agree with that?
He does complain, but I mean, he does it in a I think he does it in a constructive way. So I have an interesting view on Denny Hamlin. I used to kind of be the same way where I didn't really like him, and this is where my job kind of changed my view, because I got to interview him one time, and we sat there, like, we did the interview and we sat there for a few minutes afterwards and kind of finished the discussion. And I just said, look, this is the first time that I've really gotten to talk to you one-on-one. And I just got to say, like, I appreciate how much thought you put into, you know, this kind of thing. And he goes, if I don't, and I don't fight for the things that we need as drivers, and now as an owner driver, then, you know, who else will?
Yeah, and at the
end.
And,
like, I appreciate that.
Oh, yeah.
And he looks at it at a completely different view now. So I actually – I get it. Like, people don't like him because of that. But I think he's done a lot of good things for the sport that go unnoticed.
Okay. At the end of that, you're probably like, hey, thanks, Denny. He's like, yeah, thank you, Tom.
Yeah, basically. Well, I said, no, thanks, Hammer.
Oh,
let's see. Tom in Nashville says Stephen A. Smith and Michael Irvin.
Oh, okay. That's not bad.
Michael Irvin.
Remember, these are just annoying.
LeBron James, another one.
Although we get a lot more LeBron.
Chris Canty from Jason in Dover. Mike Gundy. Nobody knew him. Had a loud rant. Rant killed his career.
I don't
think so.
He's making millions, and they win. I mean, that's a successful program, Oklahoma State. Now, you're like, well, they have one, the big one. Well, you know, a lot of schools have it, but that's
a lot of schools won't.
Yeah, all right. But, there's no wrong answer here, but to say that he's not been successful is no.
Dylan and Antioch, easy. Clay Travis, please go away.
I think can you hear him anywhere? I'm not even sure you can anymore.
Alex Rodriguez. Alex Rodriguez.
Yes, 100%.
That's why him.
He's just obnoxious. All
right, so do you say he's obnoxious because you know, like, the steroid stuff and what he was as a player, or do you really think, like, his analysis and how he is as an analyst now is obnoxious?
Both.
Okay.
Both, 100%. Yeah. And the fact, like,
I actually like him as an analyst.
Really?
Yeah, I never thought I would say it. I hated him as a player.
Right.
Why?
More of his arrogance than anything. And then, you know, you obviously get into the steroid stuff. But, you know, that's a different conversation for another day. But it was more his arrogance. I just thought he was kind of cocky.
You hate Pete Rose?
No, but I also wasn't around when he played.
Bryce Harper?
I can't stand Bryce Harper.
I know it'd get you eventually.
I can't stand Bryce Harper. And by the way, I don't know if you've seen the video that's going around. So, I sent it to you.
Yeah.
That he helped this kid ask a girl to prom. It was pretty cool. I mean, so that's great that he's doing that. But, yeah, no, I mean, he's always come across as kind of a cocky ass to me. So,
wow. Okay.
Look, that's it. I mean, you asked.
I did ask. I'm just curious people's takes on, you know, just throw a name out there and why they, you know.
Matt from Paris says Antonio Brown.
Yeah.
Who apparently, did I see he's now bankrupt?
Is he? Oh, no. He quit on some show like Jason Whitlock's show and was just trying to flame burn everyone.
Let's see. Another for Stephen A. Smith. By far, Stephen A. Smith. I wish he only came out every 13 or 17 years. That's pretty good.
Oh, that's great.
good Lord. Willa Music Row has a list. In no particular order, LeVar Ball, Skip and Shannon, Patriots fans, Draymond Green, Patrick Beverly, Roger Clemens, Hunter Strickland, honorable mentions, Patrick Mahomes, Dark Horse, Christian Fulton.
Good. Look, Christian Fulton made the list there.
And the Astros. Well, I hope that you feel better.
Roger Clemens, real quick. You know, when a baseball player goes down for a rehab assignment, he's supposed to, like, buy everybody lunch or dinner or whatever. Evidently, Clemens went down to Lexington. I think his kid was playing at the same time there for a rehab. And he, like, bought, you know, dinner and, like, iPad. I mean, not iPads, but iPods back in the day. Like, he spent, like, $50,000. Like, you know what? That's pretty cool when they do it. Sammy Sosa did one by the Jackson for assignments with the Cubs. Did the same thing. I mean, I find that kind of a tradition really cool in baseball when guys get knocked down there because they're making millions and these minor leaguers trying to get there and these guys in the major leagues are doing all this for them. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, Scherzer did that last year.
Yeah.
He bought all the, I think, dugout and everybody else in the locker room watches, I believe.
Apple
watches.
Yeah.
If not that, a Rolex is one of the two.
So, I love it. That's cool.
We'll get to more of these as we go throughout the show. But coming up next, John McClain going to join us as he does every week. We'll talk to him here on the Chasing Big Joe Show, presented by the Omni Nashville Hotel, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Finish last, you got to kick a little. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game on this Wednesday. As we do every Wednesday, we say hello to John McClain from Houston. HoustonTexans.com is where you can find his work. John, good morning. How are you?
Guys, I'm doing great. It's a good day of OTAs. Everybody, including the Titans and Texans, are seeing their players on the field, even though they don't do squat, except basically warm up and play patty cake. And it's all about the mental part and seeing how all the new guys are adjusting. When you have new coaches like the Titans do, it's even more interesting because everything is new for everybody.
So I need – you know, OTAs are going on here, as you alluded to. So I need your help with something because, you know, even after a year almost, I'm still trying to figure out DeAndre Hopkins sometimes and how he ticks, you know, with the media and all that. So he was asked yesterday if people have been sleeping on Treylon Burks. And he says, quote, "How do I answer that without making a negative soundbite? Nein, that's no in German." And that was his answer. He then quote tweets that later and says the media is the only one sleeping on Treylon Burks. No one in the locker room doubted him or slept on him. We are not people. I can't speak for people. So nine, he's never been slept on to us. Thank you. Come again. And I get where he's coming from. I just feel like that now that's brought more attention on it that really it needed. When he could have just been like, hey, he's out here working hard. He's always been working hard. You know, give some answer like that. So you've been around him a long time. What kind of – where do you think some of that comes from?
Well, I didn't know he was bilingual. He's learned German since he left here when Bill O'Brien made the second worst trade in franchise history by shipping him to Arizona in just what turned out to be a horrendous trade. And I'm not exactly sure what that quote means, but I'll tell you, based on what everybody's seen for the first 2 years, of course, there's got to be doubts about Burks because he hadn't done what he was projected to do when he was a rookie. And I'll say this, I always tell people, you can't base a guy's career on one season unless it's somebody like, what is his name, Isaiah Wilson?
Yeah.
Who's one of the worst draft choices in the history of the NFL at any time. But sometimes it's the second year, and I'll give you an example of a guy that took three. In 1987, the Oilers used one of their two first-round picks on a wide receiver from North Carolina State, Haywood Jeffries. And Haywood had a great combine. He wasn't on the radar, but he caught everything at the combine. So they took him in the first round. In the first season, there was a strike. He crossed the picket line. He made the veterans mad, and it was a washout. And then in his second season, he didn't do what a first-round pick could do, and everybody here was blasting him and writing him off. And then for some reason in the third season, whether he finally matured, got with the program, coaches understood him better, knew how to utilize him better, it helped that he had Warren Moon as his quarterback, but he became a perennial Pro Bowl selection and an All-Pro selection and one of the greatest receivers in franchise history and always a great guy. And so never really knew what took that long because there's so many things that can go into a player finally doing a good job. And a new coaching staff a lot of times has something to do with that. So and if a guy doesn't do it by 3 years, he got to go. And so if Burks doesn't step up this year and play the way he was projected to play when they drafted him, then he'll be out of here. And but I think in Opp's way, it's his own way of trying to show support for him. And, yes, he could have said exactly what you recommend he say, Chase, but he didn't. And sometimes he marches to that different drummer. But I'll say this about DeAndre Hopkins. He's one of my favorite players to cover here, not just because he was a great receiver, because I like dealing with him.
You know, we're talking to John McClain this morning on the Chase and Big Joe show. You know, John, in the 80s and 90s, you covered football and everything. OTAs were not that vital, that important, because they weren't signing 10, 12, 15 guys for agency. Why are OTAs so important now? I mean, we're in the middle of May, and we're breaking down, you know, Hopkins running an 8-yard in route or something. Why are these so important? Is it because of camaraderie? Because of new – why is it so important, OTAs, now that they weren't – we didn't have them back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s?
Well, back then, you worked them out. They got a little vacation, and they came and they worked out. And they had to work out in pads, and they hit. And then when they started having strikes, and that went back to the 70s, and then the 80s, and the best one that they got the most out of was 1987, which led to free agency in 93. And players wanted changes. They didn't want coaches beating them up all through the off season. And remember, training camp used to be, well, there used to be six preseason games, so training camp was 8 weeks. And as soon as they got there, there was full contact and two-a-day practices. And they usually started getting ready physically in June, and because guys worked jobs because they didn't make a lot of money back then. They had a lot of them had off-season jobs already preparing for post-careers. So when they started getting some power through the union, one of the things they wanted was more time off. And then when teams started to build these incredible facilities and they built cafeterias and they would have three healthy meals a day and they had lounges for players to play video games, pool tables, ping pong tables, anything they could do to get the players to come over there in the off season and take care of themselves, and then players started figuring out, if I do this, I can play longer and make more money. And you don't have guys partying as much as they used to. You had drinking days Thursdays with offensive linemen to go to a local pub after practice and see how much beer they could drink, and didn't mind the media coming over and writing about it, broadcasting about it, putting it on TV about beers they were chugging. And I can't remember, stop me if I told y'all this story last week. I may have, about Lamar Lathan and Joe Bowden and Buddy Ryan when Buddy came in at 93 and he watched all the tape. There were certain players he wanted to get more out of. And one of them was Lamar Lathan, number one pick in 1990. So he busted him down to like fourth team outside linebacker. And to get three in front of him, he moved middle linebacker Joe Bowden over to third team, and Bowden and Lathan used to get in fights, fist fights, as they were lining up to see who would go ahead of the other one in the off-season program. They had a rookie nose tackle, Glenn Montgomery, from the University of Houston, who thought he had to, I think he was a fifth-round pick, thought he had to fight his way onto the team. And in the off-season program, with no pads, he would get in a fist fight with Mike Munchak, thinking that was the
I wouldn't want
way
that.
To think that was the best way to impress the coaches. And Bruce Matthews as well. Bruce got in fights. One time, Lamar Lathan and Kevin Donnelly, a guard, they came back, and it might have been 93, and they got in fights on the field during practice. And then they got in fight one time in the weight room, started throwing dumbbells at each other. And those kind of things don't go on anymore. one time in the offensive line room, Munchak and Matthews are in there. I had Hall of Fame guards, and these two players, Hashim El-Mashtoub, a rookie, and Stan, I can't remember his last name, from the University of Texas, Stan Thomas. They got in a fight, and blood was everywhere. And Munchak Matthews said people just had to back away against the wall. Those kind of things used to go on, and coaches had players on just so tightly wound for making them beat each other up all the time. Fights happened everywhere, and the coaches loved it. Jerry Glanville, Buddy Ryan, you know, they were tough guys who thought that kind of stuff toughened them up. Jerry Glanville thought Mike Munchak, coming from Pennsylvania, the tough guy from eastern Pennsylvania, where Bruce Matthews, the laid-back beach boy from Southern California, that Matthews would get tougher hanging out, being best friends with Munchak. And then he thought, uh-oh, you think Munchak's becoming a laid-back California beach boy. And so it was fun, but it was so much different than it is today, where they have rules against everything, starting with you can't have pads and you can't have contact. And that's why OTAs are so important from the mental part, especially when you have a new coaching staff installing their systems.
We'll have more with John McClain coming up next here on the Chasing Big Joe Show, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game on this Wednesday. Continuing our discussion with the great John McClain. HoustonTexans.com is where you can find his work.
John, as always, at OTAs, there are certain guys not there. Micah Parsons not there. Brandon Ayuk's not there. Some other players around the league are not at OTAs. Is that a big deal, or just it's the norm this time of year?
No, it's the norm this time of year. First of all, as you guys know, the only part of the offseason program that's mandatory is the mini camp. I know, like, Texans left tackle Laramie Tunsil never shows for the off-season program except for the mini camp. He works out on his own, has businesses he's involved with, but he always shows up in great shape and plays great. And what's weird, I remember last year Sheldon Rankins, a defensive tackle, had signed with the Texans, a veteran, and he didn't show up for the off-season program. And that was weird for a guy, so I thought he might have trouble making a team. He played great. They given him 1 year, $9 million. He ended up getting a $4 million raise from Cincinnati. So some guys just like to do it on their own. Some guys do it because they think it's hurting the team, they think that it's helping them get more money, showing that they should get the raise they want. But I don't think it's any big deal unless it was a rookie or a player coming off an injury. Usually, though, when you have a new staff, that's when you want your guys there because they're supposed to be learning. Now, if you want to teach a player on Zoom, you can do it. But when you have a new staff and you say you don't show up and a guy you're competing with does, and they see him through the off season and they get to know him and they like his attitude, if it's Ty, then the tie is going to the guy that showed up.
Talking to John McClain from Houston. You know, I've kind of thought about, like, biggest moves of the offseason, and as I relate things to the AFC South and the team that you cover, I think the biggest move of the offseason might be a non-move, and that is the Texans hanging on to Bobby Slowick as the offensive coordinator going into C.J. Stroud's second year. Because you know how this works sometimes. The league will get tape on a guy and has a tremendous rookie year and then maybe goes back in the sophomore year. But how important has it been to have more time with Slowick and Stroud together?
Well, Slowick wasn't ready to be head coach. I wrote that after the season. He'd been a play caller for 1 year. Yes, he'd come up under Kyle Shanahan and runs the same system, but he needed 2 years. When D'Amico Ryans had been defensive coordinator for 1 year for the 49ers, which was in 2021, and he did a great job, and he got interviews, and then he said, I need to go back, and I need another year of experience. And he did, and then he had five teams interested in him, and that's what Slowick has done. It wasn't that he turned anybody down. He got experience in interviewing, which will help him next year. I fully expect him to be gone after this season. He comes from a football family. That pedigree has served him very well, and he spent 3 years working for Pro Football Focus, which he says was invaluable. That was after Washington when he worked with Mike Shanahan. And while Kyle was gallivanting around to Cleveland and Atlanta, he worked there. And he said from watching tape every day, it helped him become a better coach. And so also their quarterback coach, Gerard Johnson, last year was his first year as a quarterback coach. And he had a couple teams interview him as offensive coordinator. So the Texans gave him both big raises. I expect Gerard Johnson to be the offensive coordinator this time last year. But as you guys know, continuity is important, especially when I wrote about this last week. All those were the things Slowick and Gerard Johnson and told C.J. Stroud. All those defensive coordinators have been working a lot in the offseason, watching tape of our offense to see how they can better defense our offense and you in particular. So he has to evolve. And some of the mistakes he made as a rookie, he's got to clean up. So if you have a good coach and you can keep him, especially your play caller, it's invaluable. A lot of people say, well, I want my head coach to be an offensive coach, because if you have a defensive coach like the Texans do, if the offensive coordinator calls the plays, does a good job, he's going to get a coaching job. But that's a good problem to have. It's amazing to me how many people the 49ers lose every year as coaches and front office people, like Rand Cawthorn being a good example, Adam Peters to Washington this year, and they just have people ready to step up to replace them. And you wonder, will their well ever run dry?
So we were talking about this yesterday, and it was stemmed from on Monday, NFL Network was showing the 2002 divisional playoff game between the Titans and the Steelers, the one where Nedney flops and they end up winning the game and all of that. But McNair's just getting pelted throughout the whole thing. But, you know, we were all used to that at that point and his toughness and all of that. And so it kind of stemmed a question of when was that moment where we kind of knew, like, okay, this is the dude. This is the guy that is just going to change the franchise, and we know what he ended up doing. Was there a singular moment for you last year watching Stroud that you kind of knew that, hey, this kid's got it, and he's going to be the dude here for years to come?
Well, I knew he would be the dude for years to come, but I never had any idea he's going to be as good as he was as a rookie. We didn't see anything in off-season program. It wasn't that he was bad. It's just D'Amico Ryans kept playing it down. Davis Mills was was the starter, and we knew Stroud was going to be the starter for the first game. But Ryans wouldn't admit it until, like, right before the season. And he didn't do anything to stand out in the preseason. And they didn't play a lot of veterans. He's playing with a lot of new players because the new staff had to figure him out. And they lose their first game. And at Baltimore, didn't see anything. And in the second game, they lost here at Indianapolis. And he threw for 190 yards in the fourth quarter when they were playing catch-up. But we're saying, okay, the Colts are playing loose coverage. You know, anybody could do that. And in the third game, they went to Jacksonville, 37-17. And all of a sudden, he threw some deep balls to Tank Dell, and he got out of trouble a couple of times. And that's where I started to see it. And then the next game, they beat Pittsburgh here, worse than any team in Houston had beaten Pittsburgh since the 91 Oilers. And at that point, I said, that guy's a dude who's got a chance to be really good this year. And one of the things that amazed me from watching Stroud was his accuracy. Throws that he would make 20 yards at the sideline, throw on time. That, his decision-making, were the two things that really stood out. I didn't see that with Steve McNair here because he was not the regular starter. Because they signed Steve to a 7-year contract, they said, well, we're going to sign Chris Chandler, and we're going to play him until Steve is ready. And the veterans wanted McNair. They wanted to see Steve in there. They used to complain to me off the record, and I could write it, that they wanted McNair over Chandler, but he didn't get that opportunity, of course, till they got to Nashville.
Talking to John McClain on the Chase and Big Joe Show. And, John, I got to ask you this. I mean, the comments from Harrison Butker, what he said at the commencement speech and all that, and not necessarily an opinion, but the way everyone reacted, including the NFL, I thought was, man, this is something different that we've seen now. And my question is, does this stop other players from speaking out? They'll see something like, oh, I don't, or maybe volunteering or doing something? Because I think the tentacles of this, John, are far-reaching.
Well, I think the fact that it's a kicker, it's like, I think it was Mike Florio said, he's a kicker, who cares? Well, fact is, he did it at a college that has more women than men. And I think some of the things that made people mad was he talking about women wanting to be homemakers and have kids. And, you know, that's kind of like the 1950s and 60s. And there was a lot of interpretations that people had. And it's not like the Chiefs don't have enough off-the-field issues. It's a good thing that they're winning Super Bowls, because letting a guy like Rasheed Rice, who we have on video, what he did, could have killed people, getting sued, letting him come out there and go through everything like nothing's wrong, I think they should have set him aside and not let him participate in that. It's a terrible look. It's like they don't care. Of course they don't care. Nobody cares what guys do off the field as long as they can play. And if they can play, they're going to play. The league has to sideline them. They don't want to make those tough choices. So they got enough issues as it is, and I'm sure they're tired of being asked about it. And Buckner's going to get asked about it a lot, too, and I'm pretty sure he's not going to want to talk about it.
Yeah, I know that, and that's the thing, is that, you know, he said it, he was invited, and he did all that. I just think, you know, if some athletes want to go out and speak something and volunteer, like, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't go help this certain organization because the blowback I might get from that. I just think there's more that's going to come down the road because of this. And in the end, John, really, nobody wins.
Joe, it depends on what you say. There's a lot of people who go out and help people and say the right things. He said what he believes, and a lot of people disagree with what he said about Jewish people. He had something he had was just totally wrong factually. And that was another thing, misinformation. So I think players will be very careful about what they say. Players speak out all the time, but something like that caught people off guard because it was so well thought out and it showed what he's all about. And obviously his wife agrees with him. And so it was certainly unusual. But I think people still are going to say a lot of stuff. And he's not stupid. You know, his was well planned out. Most stuff that gets players in trouble is what they put online. because they're very stupid about what they put.
And then they delete it.
You know, and then when they delete it, shows what morons they can be.
Right.
And we're going to get more and more of that because of social media.
Yeah, 100%. John, appreciate it as always. Enjoy these chats. We'll do it again next week.
Chase and Joe, thank you very much. I always appreciate you having me on.
For sure. John McClain joining us here on the program, and you can find his work at HoustonTexans.com.
We got to revisit our question. I think we got a winner.
Okay.
The question is, the cicada of the sports world, the most annoying, you don't hate him, just the most annoying person, whatever, fan base, coach, the cicada of the sports world that drives you crazy, you just wish would go away. We got a winner.
We will do that coming up next. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.